recorded the sessions today, or Dan's going to do that on the CD, so if you'd like to have those, that's on what you're doing today, I'm like, yeah.
All right, good morning. All right, that was pretty good. I don't have to repeat that again. We are glad to be here. It's nice to get outside of our sphere of influence down in Henderson, Tennessee. Has anybody been to Henderson, Tennessee? Mark has. Oh, quite a few of you. Okay, so you know from where we come. And Mark's already introduced Frank Williams, who will be preaching tomorrow, and Steve Slocum. I'm almost 10 years now at Fried Hardeman. I tell people I went from Wall Street to Main Street, and it's been a lot of fun. You wear a lot of hats when you work at a small Christian school, but I generally do mostly fundraising at Fried Hardeman. I'm a certified financial planner, so we do work with people that want to set up planned giving. There are estate plans for Fried Hardeman. Wills, trust, gift annuities, things like that. So that's just a little bit more about what we do down there. But today, I didn't know what you were all interested in. How many people here, let me just kind of see a show of hands so we can gauge our time. How many people are here to learn more about estate planning? Okay. How many people are here to learn more about just basic financial planning? Okay. What about investment planning? Oh, that's good, because that's my weakest area. what about debt and savings, that type of thing? Okay. All right, well, good. Well, we'll spend the most time about general financial planning and estate planning at the end. What about charitable giving? You don't want to raise your hand on that. I'll talk to you afterwards. No. I do have some charitable things that might help you in your giving at some point. There's a lot of non-cash ways to give to the church that we'll talk about as we have time at the end. So, and feel free to ask any questions. Stop me anytime. And can you see this? I'm probably in your way here, but I thought I'd kind of stand over here. So, I turned it on before. I thought I'd forget it. So, okay. And can everybody hear me? Okay, good. Well, let's start out. I always like to start out with statistics. Of course, my favorite statistic I ever heard was from Barbara Bush. And she said, yeah, let's try the lights. Turn those off. Now, is that too dark? Are you guys going to fall asleep? You can see the board much better, though, right? Okay. Barbara Bush had a statistic that she read off when she was down at Fried Hardeman speaking. And she said her favorite statistic is, if you lay everybody head to toe that fall asleep in church, they would be a lot more comfortable. So that's probably my favorite statistic. You know, 90% of statistics are made up on the spot. But these are some statistics that I wanted to kind of cover with you. Maybe I can get this far back. Nearly 6 out of 10 Americans are trying to make changes for retirement, and so they're not real confident with what's going on currently. Now, this was taken in 2005. This was before we saw this big market drop lately. Personal savings rate is a percentage of income. It was 7.5% in 1980. Now it's 2.3%. It's actually less than 2%, if you can believe that. It's about 1.3%. Now, just by a show of hands, if you only invest about 1% of your earnings, will you have enough to retire? Raise your hand if you think you will. Okay, so we've got a big problem. I'll talk to you afterwards now. We have a big problem in our country. We're not going to have enough to retire off of. I need to do this. You want to help me pass these out? We made some printouts for you. There's some more. Negative return on savings. People are pulling money out, so they don't have any money, or they're borrowing money, so their net worth is negative. Okay. In 2003, again, this is kind of dated, but the average value was $40,000, and 25% said they didn't have any savings. And then 47% said they're somewhat or very confident they'll have enough for retirement. And there's also an area you can take notes on your handout. So these are just some statistics. Now let's look at debt. This is a big problem in our country. The revolving debt is the part, revolving debt is the part that really scares me. In 2004, $780 billion. And this is over $1 trillion now in credit card debt, in revolving debt. The average revolving balance among families making less than $75,000, $3,800. And then the next one, a Gallup poll showed that of 1,000 consumers surveyed, that they had an average of 3.6 cards. So if you take 3.6 credit cards and you multiply that by $3,800, well over $10,000 in credit card debt, okay? And what the government did do a year or so ago, which I'm glad they did, although it did cause a few people to file bankruptcy, they made the minimum payment double. It was a double payment. Of course, now they're talking about not having any minimum payments and some other things, which kind of having a break because of the financial crisis. I don't think that's a good idea either. But and the last one, Americans paid more than $24 billion in credit card fees. Okay, so that's not necessarily their balance paying it off. That's the interest. So if you wonder why these credit card companies have the ads during the Super Bowl, you know, it's because they can afford them. Now, how many people in here work for a credit card company? I don't want to step on too many toes this early this morning. I'll probably step on a few toes, but I usually step on my own, too, while I'm up here. Bankruptcies. Let's talk about bankruptcy for a minute. Is everybody comfortable with what a bankruptcy is? Basically, it's a legal process that says, okay, I can't pay my bills. I've got to stop everything. Creditors, back off. It ruins your credit. It absolutely ruins your credit. But look at this, 1.7 million, or an average of 1 in 7 households over the past decade, and it may be higher than that now. So not to start off with the bad news, but there's a lot more good news I want to talk about. So that's kind of how we're doing as a country. And so that's kind of the unfortunate thing. I want to talk about three things when it comes to basic financial planning. I call it my financial fork. If you think of the three prongs of a fork, we have money management, we have spending and credit, and we have saving and investing. Okay, those are the three things we're going to talk about in this early session. So first of all, I want to look at the joy and pain of credit. Now, how many Dave Ramsey fans do I have in the room? Raise your hands. Dave Ramsey. Does anybody know who Dave Ramsey is? Okay, we have a couple of people. Well, he says never use credit cards. Okay, never touch them. I don't necessarily agree with Dave Ramsey. If you're a disciplined person, you can use credit cards. Now, let's just look at the advantages of using credit or credit cards. They do provide free loans. How do they provide a free loan?
They're using their credit for 30 days.
For 30 days or maybe even less, 25 days. So as long as you pay the balance in full, you got to borrow their money for free. Provide additional cash flow for major purchases. What is a major purchase? What do we define as a major purchase? Car, house, okay. Build your credit. It can build your credit by using credit cards, but it's not the only way to build credit. And a lot of this is adapted from a class I teach, the freshmen at Freed Hardeman. We try to talk to the freshmen when they first start college because we can't stop the credit card statements from reaching their boxes. We can't interfere with the Postal Service. And so we try to talk to them early so they won't apply for a credit card, especially without their parents knowing about it. But they can do that because they get those. Every college, they get those credit cards, those credit card offers. And then total housing debt. Now, if you want to make a special note here, these are some of the key statistics that will help whenever you borrow money for a house. Now, the banks, I used to say this, the banks will let you borrow way more than you can afford to pay back. Now, these days, I don't know because credit's so tight. But as a general rule, total housing debt needs to be less than 28% of your gross income. Okay, so if you're making $50,000 a year, the total housing debt you have needs to be $14,000 a year or less. Okay, now what's included in total housing debt? Can anybody tell me? Is it just your house payment? Mm-hmm. Your taxes, your insurance, you got to pay insurance. So all that together needs to be less than 28% of your gross income.
Now,
yes, sir.
You're talking about your payments per year, are you not? Per
year.
Not your total housing debt.
Not your total housing debt.
Okay.
I'm talking about I'm talking about your payments. Well, 28% of your gross income every year. So yes, your payments every year. You're correct. Y'all coming on in? There's some seats on the front pew. up here. Now, total debt. What's involved in total debt?
All debt.
All debt. So what are some examples besides your house?
Auto.
Auto. Consumer loans, credit cards. Okay, so total debt needs to be less than 36% of gross. So maybe a little bit more than a third of your gross income needs to go to total debt. Now, this is a general rule of thumb. Now, if you follow these, you're going to be okay. But can you borrow more? Can you owe more than this? Absolutely, and that's why we're in the shape we're in. Total consumer debt must be less than 20% of net. What am I talking about when I talk about consumer debt? I'm really talking about unsecured debt. I'm talking about credit cards. I'm talking about not necessarily unsecured, because this would also include your car payment. But what happens with your car? When you buy a car, let's say you buy a car for $20,000, and you drive it home, and you park it in this nice, warm garage space, how much is it worth now?
A lot less,
$15,000. So suddenly, you're upside down. And we'll talk a little bit more about how you can fix that problem. Okay, when we're talking about money, it's very important to remember that the only book we really need to go to answer our questions about money is the Bible. Can anybody tell me, and I have a door prize, can anybody tell me how many times money and possessions are mentioned in Scripture? Old and New Testament. Money and possessions. Anything about money or possessions? Does anybody have an idea?
50 times.
50 times. Anybody else? 1,000 times. Anybody else? You probably know the answer to this. Okay. More than 1,000? Anybody? I'll give it to whoever's closest. Anybody else want to guess?
1,001.
1,001. Anybody else? Anybody? You want it, or should I give it to Mark? You said 1,000. You guys can play. This is a Fried Hardeman notepad, so we'll give another one out in the second session. 2,400 times, just about. Okay, so 2,400 times. 2,400 times. Can anybody tell me how many times faith is mentioned in both the Old and New Testament? About 500 times. What about prayer? About 500 times. So what do we see about that? 2,400 times. Now, they're not all about what do you do with your money. But there's a lot, and we can already start turning to Deuteronomy if you have your Bible with you. But the Lord knew we were going to have a lot of trouble with this, and the people, it's no new story. They had trouble with it back in biblical times. Let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 28, and I'm going to ask you to read Deuteronomy 28, verses 1 through 4, and then verse 12, and if someone else can turn to Deuteronomy, I'd like you to read 15 and then verse 43 and 44, but let's hear from Steve first.
It says, "Now it shall come to pass, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth. And all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you, because you obey the voice of the Lord your God. Blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the country. Blessed shall be the fruit of your body, the produce of your ground, and the increase of your herd, the increase of your cattle, and the offspring of your flocks." Verse 12 says, "The Lord will open to you his good treasure, the heavens, to give the rain to your land in its season, and to bless all the work of your hand. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow."
Okay, so if we follow the commands that were given, he shall open up his storehouse to us. And then this is really talking about debt. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. Now, if someone could read verse 15 and then 43 and 44, whoever has that, if you can see it in this dark room. Okay, back.
Verse 15. "Thus come to pass that thou wilt not hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee."
And then it kind of lists all the curses, which we won't read today, but verse 43. Yeah.
"The stranger that is within thee shall get up of
above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail.
Now, how many of us like to be the tail? I mean, sometimes they talk about the tail wagging the dog. In that case, I guess we do. But not many of us want to be the tail. And in this passage, I really feel like this is related to debt. Okay, what's the alien or what's the stranger among us? What can be the alien or stranger among us? Debt. Okay, debt does a lot of bad things to us. Now, we're going to talk about when we can owe money. The Bible does not tell us when we can owe money, unfortunately. It does not get that specific. But debt can presume upon tomorrow. How does debt presume upon tomorrow? You got to pay it back sometime? Yes, ma'am?
It makes plans for you.
Makes the plans for you. Yeah, you have to do whatever that debt says. Presume. Okay, does that assume that we're going to live long enough to pay our debts off? Yes. Now, how could it deny God an opportunity? Just wonder if you all have ever thought about this. How could being in a lot of debt deny God an opportunity? Or how could using debt deny God an opportunity? What's that?
Won't be able to give back to him
if you have a lot of debt, a lot of burden of debt. Yes, sir? You can't give if you don't have it. What about the fact that when you get in a lot of debt, you might have to take second jobs, third jobs. You can't worship with your church family. What about the people that could help in time of immense need? If we just go out and spend money on a credit card, instead of maybe asking our brothers and sisters, is there any work I can do for you? Can I earn a little bit of extra money? You know, it allows brothers and sisters to help those people, so it denies them an opportunity. But then if you're in debt, instead of prayerfully considering a purchase or prayerfully considering where you are, you just use that credit card. You just, you know, it can be a weak thing that happens. So I think it can deny God an opportunity. What are some other ways it denies God an opportunity? Okay, that's right. Absolutely.
Reputation, too. You can get a bad credit rating and have a bad reputation from it.
And then if you have a bad credit rating, what happens when you go to borrow money? It takes more of your disposable income to pay that debt off, and then you don't have the money to give back. You're not able to give your first fruits.
Many people let everything come between them and God, and many people says, well, I'm coming back to the church, but I've got some things I have to work out first, and this is only one of those things they use as excuse.
Yeah, they don't read about the rich young ruler, do they?
No.
They need to read that.
You need the word when you have problems.
Yeah. He said, give everything away. Get rid of everything. And that's sometimes what it takes. But there's a lot of things that keep us weighed down. And there's that alien and stranger. And there can be a lot of aliens and strangers among us, not just debt. Okay, so this is what I've come up with in the last 10 years of working with people. These are the three times that you can owe money. Okay, number one, the purchased item is an asset with potential appreciation. Who can tell me what an asset is?
Home.
A home. What else?
A car.
It's anything you own, really. Yes, a car. It's anything you own. Now, what's appreciation? What happens when something appreciates? It goes up in value. Okay? So what is an asset that you own that goes up in value? Your home, real estate.
Hopefully.
What else? 1969 GTO. Do you have a 1969 GTO? What about antiques, coins, gold? Gold's really appreciated. So stocks used to, but stocks and bonds and things like that. So now, I don't believe you need to borrow money to put it in the stock market. I'm not saying that. But if you buy things that appreciate, it's okay to borrow money for them if you have to have that thing and you can afford it. And we'll talk about that in number three. The value of the item exceeds the amount owed. So let's look at the car example. This is what I tell the students at Freed Hardeman. When you buy that car for $20,000 and you drive it home and now it's worth $15,000, Well, how do we get to borrow money ever for a car if that happens? How can we do it? How can you borrow money for a car and make sure the car is worth more than the loan?
Buy an old car.
Buy an old car.
Make a good deal.
Make a good deal. What about put a little money down? Okay, you need to figure out, if you can, what the depreciation is. Put that down, and then you won't be upside down in your payment. Okay, so you can do this even with a car, but you need to put enough money down. The payment does not strain the budget. This is something that I've seen a lot of people struggle with because they're all about wanting to budget now. You know, that's what you're supposed to do, is you're supposed to have a budget. But they make that budget so tight, they can't even leave the house. They can't do anything. They can't put gas in their car. Why is that? Because they budget on 100% of their income. And what I want to appeal to you today is that you need to have about 5 to 10% that you do not budget for at all. Because that way, I'm not talking about your emergency fund. You need to put money in your emergency fund. But 5 to 10%, if you have $1,000 coming in a month, you need to have about $100 that you're not spending. Okay, then that gives you a little bit of flexibility. If you want to give a little bit more away, you can. If you want to go out to a nice dinner, if you want to drive, you know, out of town somewhere and buy that expensive gas, not as expensive as it used to be, but it'll go back up. So you need to make sure it doesn't strain the budget. Okay. I don't know if you heard that. That was kind of a scream on my computer. Let's look at an example. Okay, let's look. How many people can tell me what compounding interest is? Yes, ma'am. So if I borrow $1,000 and it's at 10%, I owe $1,100. And then what happens if I don't pay it off another year? I owe money on top of the $1,100, not on top of the $1,000. Exactly. So let's look at an example. And this is something I use for the students. I say, students, if you borrow the money for all your books, which books can all actually cost almost $1,000 now for both semesters, which is terrible, but anyway. 12%, which is pretty standard for a credit card these days. It's a lot lower than it used to be, but still high. For 4 years, you're in college for 4 years. Well, that's $1,611, and what I tell them is they're flushing $152 a year down the toilet. Okay, that means they don't pay anything. Okay, and they're paying interest on top of interest and on top of interest. And so that's kind of a little example. What is a credit score? Let's talk about a credit score for a minute. Who's the credit police? I call them the credit police. That's probably kind of a harsh term, but who are the credit agencies? Who knows about all your credit? Can you give me any names? Union, Equifax. Okay, here they all are, and there's their phone number. Now, why should we take a look at our credit report?
Make sure we're the only one using it.
That's talking about identity theft, right? Okay. Make sure there's no mistakes on it. Is there a way to get our credit report for free? Have you seen all the commercials? I won't sing it up here. annualcreditreport.com is a way you can go on there. Now, you can choose. I think you can only do it once a year, but see, what you can do is you can choose a different company each time. So does it affect your credit poorly if you run your credit report? It can over time if you do it a lot. You know, one or two times a year is not a problem. But what is that showing the lender if you're accessing your credit report a lot? You're concerned about it, and also you're needing to look at your credit and maybe borrow more money. You know, you're always going to credit first instead of looking at your assets to buy something. So that's why that can happen. But what is a good credit score? 700? 700 plus, good, pretty good credit score. I've never seen a 900. I don't even know if they go that high, but 850 is a really good score. What's a bad score below 700? What happens if you have, we talked about this earlier, what happens if you have a 750 versus a 550 and you go to borrow money? Yeah, lower interest rate. So it's kind of a cycle. The better if you don't need to borrow the money, well, you can get it cheaper. Basically, is how it works. If you really need the money, you're going to pay more. Okay, are there any questions about that? Write down these numbers. Give them a call. Take a look at your credit report. Especially, I'm a junior. My father's a senior, And they get stuff on our both of our credit reports all the time. That's the one disadvantage of having the same exact name. And we used to live in the same household, so it was definitely a problem. Okay, let's look at categories of credit information. Now, what this is, what we're doing is we're talking about the worst things to be on your credit report to the not-so-bad things. Okay, so this is the worst thing that can show up on your credit report. Late payments, collections, and bankruptcies. What is a late payment? How late is late when we're talking? 30 days past due, 60 days past due. Are we talking about just missing it by a day or two? No, because that typically doesn't hit your credit report. Now, if that's happening every time, if you're 5 days late every time paying a bill, it's going to show up. But that's what a late payment is. What about a collection? When do you go from late payments to actually a collect? What is a collection? They're trying to collect. So first of all, they're saying this person couldn't pay their debt, so that looks really bad, and it's gone to collection. It's been turned over. And if that happens, then you're getting a lot of phone calls and things like that. Bankruptcies, absolutely. We all know that. It's the worst. Now, can anybody tell me the difference between the different types of bankruptcy? Let's just look at chapter 7 and chapter 11. Is there any difference? Yeah. Chapter 11 is reorganization. I will. Chapter 7 is I'm not going to pay my debts back. Now, chapter 11 is still bad, but it's not as bad as chapter 7. Yes, sir.
I have a question on this.
Okay.
The collection and so forth. My wife had a stroke a little over a year and a half ago, and it was down in Florida, and we have had the awfulest time getting those people to get through Florida and to Kentucky to our insurance companies. That goes to Medicare pretty easy. But then we have Blue Cross Blue Shield as a secondary. And it seems like that you can't get, and I got on the phone one place at least 6 times, begging them to get the information into the insurance company so they could do what they was going to do, and then I would pay what was left. Oh, yes, we'll do it. And never did. And finally, they let the time run out, and $912 they didn't collect because the collection agency never would come through with the paperwork. What does that do to my credit?
So you were never contacted by a collection agency?
They sent the letters to me.
And you talked to...
And then I went back to the Blue Cross Blue Shield lady, and she called them with me on the line, and we stayed on the line for long periods of time, at least 6 times.
Okay.
There was others, too.
Right.
But for this one place... Yes, we need to do that. We'll get that right to you a month later. Still haven't done anything. Finally, they said, well, this needs to go to some of our supervisors. They gave numbers to the supervisors, and it didn't even ring a telephone that we couldn't get through. And they had record of all the times
right.
that we had called. And finally, the last one, they said, we'll just have to cancel this out. It's past the date that we can bill.
Have you taken a look at your credit report?
Huh?
Have you taken a look at your credit report?
No.
Give one of these a call. And see if that's on there. But it's probably written off, and it's probably not going to be a problem. But you need to check. Now, in that situation, what I would do is take a copy of the bill and send it directly to Blue Cross Blue Shield if they say they don't have it. And you may have to take the step in getting in there and being the mediator. But if you go and take a look at this and it's not on there, you're okay.
They had part of the end.
Not all of it.
Not all that they needed. So
okay.
The process. You see, they have to have what Medicare has paid and all this for the process.
Right.
And the people never would send them complete information.
So Blue Cross Blue Shield never paid for it.
Never paid because they never got the...
Right.
They never got what was needed. And we begged them.
Yeah.
I mean, they have the record where we was on there, and they have the number
yeah.
of times that we called.
You should be okay then. I think you'll be all right. But you need to check. Just to make sure. Now, let's go back to that bankruptcy deal for a second. This, you reminded me of something. As Christians, let's say we file chapter 13 or we file chapter 7 and we get in better financial shape. Let's say we file chapter 7 and 7 years goes by or however much time. When you get extra money, okay, all your debts have been forgiven. Should you contact those creditors and pay them at that point? Yes. Yes. I don't care if legally you're not on the hook. You need to pay your debts. We're told in the Bible to pay our debts. And so if in this situation, if you didn't have any insurance and then you never had to pay that, you still need to write out a check and send it to that medical provider because, you know, even though they wrote it off, as Christians, we got to pay our debts. Okay? All right. Let's look at the second one, outstanding debt. Okay, if I make $20,000 a year and I owe $200,000, is anybody going to give me a loan? Probably not. Okay? So, because I have so much debt. And that's outstanding debt's not the great debt. You know, that's outstanding debt. That's not the good debt. That's just how much you owe. Okay, so that's not good. That's the second worst thing. Length of credit history. This is important, but not as important. And I talk to the students mostly about this because they say, well, I heard I've got to get a credit card or something. And I said, well, how many of you have school loans? And about 80% of the class raise their hand. And I said, you have begun your credit history. Okay, now, when you start to repay it is when they really start to see how credit worthy you are. But you've started your credit history by those other ways besides getting a credit card, getting a loan for a car. Here's one of the things that you could do, but you have to have a very good trusting relationship with your children. Parents can actually put their child on a payment, on a car or on something, and the parents make the payments, but that also affects the student's credit history. But now that can backfire on either side, obviously. But that's a way to establish your child's credit history. You don't have to tell them about it necessarily, I suppose. But if they're on the hook, they need to know that they're on that account. But that's one way to build a credit history. Types of credit in use. Okay, so consumer debt and credit cards, revolving debt's the worst. And then good debt is probably, you know, a home mortgage or something like that. That's not as important. And then new applications for credit. This is the least effective. I mean, this is the thing that doesn't bother your credit as much. But it still is an issue. You don't need to be applying for credit every month. So that's kind of how the hierarchy goes. It can. Let me tell you something that's interesting. Let's say you have two credit cards, and one has a limit of $20,000, the other has a limit of $20,000. And you owe $5,000 on each, okay? Well, let's say you pay off one with the other. You know, a lot of people do that. So now you owe $10,000 on this $20,000 credit card. So then you say, well, I'm going to cancel the other one. Okay, now what does that do for your debt? You had $40,000 available, and you owe $10,000. When you cancel that credit card, you now have $20,000 available, and you owe $10,000. So suddenly, you went from only using 25% of your available debt to using 50%. So even if you pay off a card, it may not be the best thing to cancel it. Have you ever thought about that? That does happen, and that can affect. Now, take it out of your wallet. You know, don't use it. Cut it up if you want to, but keep the account open for a little while, and your credit will actually be higher. Question? Number of cards.
They look at it, what the maximum payment amount would be if you max that out. Because if you got an automobile loan and then the next day you maxed out your credit cards,
okay,
they look at that as part of your debt to income ratio.
So that's a good point. Did everybody hear what she said? They look at all what you can max out all your bills if you have all those cards. It does make a difference. I mean, you don't need to have a lot of cards. But I've also seen proof that can happen if you cancel that card. Now, if you have five or six cards, yes, get rid of that card. But if you just have two, I don't think it's going to look quite as bad.
Because there's a lot of stores that will offer like 10% discount or
off. Yeah, I would not do that because sometimes it's hard to get those things canceled. I had that happen with Goldsmiths, which is now Macy's, I think, and it was hard. I mean, I still had that card open, and I looked at my credit history 5 years after I thought I canceled it. So don't do that if you keep from it. And that's one thing that gets our students. They go to a Titans game and they get a free T-shirt if they open up a credit account. Well, it's not worth that T-shirt. Okay, so if I get in debt, how do I bounce back? Well, the first thing I say is you really need to pray. You need to pray about it. You need to talk to God and you need to try to, you know, open up and say, why did I get in this situation? You need to examine why you got in that situation, and you need to ask for His help. because he can help you more than anybody else. You can also go to good counsel. You know, there's a lot of people that are brothers and sisters in Christ that are very wise, and they may be able to help you. But the first thing you need to do is pray. Establish a written budget. Okay, what do we do when we establish a written budget? Come on in. There's some seats down front here. You'll be glad to know. So establish a written budget. So what is a written budget? What do we write down? Well, we write down all of our assets. That's what we own. There's some handouts right there if you want to. And then there's a list of our liabilities, what we owe. Okay, we hope that our assets are more than what our liabilities are, but that's kind of how you start your budget. Or you can do it this way. Everything that comes in, that's probably more, and everything that goes out, this is kind of more of an income statement. And then whatever's left, that's what you have left. But that's where you need to start. I mean, how much do I owe? How much do I own? Establish a repayment plan. What do you think you should pay back first? And this is kind of going back to Dave Ramsey, if any of you are Dave Ramsey. The highest interest rate. Okay, is that always the case? Okay, what smaller balance. Why would you pay off a smaller balance? Motivation. Now, it's also good to keep in mind that highest, but think about it. And Dave Ramsey calls it the debt snowball. But if you owe five different things and you pay one of those off, man, that makes you feel good. And what gets to happen with that minimum payment from that debt? You roll it over to the next one. And so that's kind of what I put here. But obviously you need to take a look at your interest rates. There's some seats up front or back there. Consider earning additional income. How do we do this? This is always an option, but this is, remember when we were talking about denying God an opportunity, if we get stressed out, we have three or four different jobs. But one of the ways you can earn additional income is to get another job, okay, and put it on. Now, another thing, I don't really agree probably as much with Dave Ramsey as some people do. He says try to put it all towards debt, and I really am a believer of kind of splitting it. Put it in saving a portion of it and then putting the rest into debt. But that's up to you, you know. I do a 50-50 type of thing. If I ever get any additional income, half goes on the house or the car and the other half goes in the bank. But, yes, and that's we're going to get to the emergency fund. But, yes, starting with if you get $1,000 saved, then you can start paying all your debt because what happens if you have an emergency? You can tap into $1,000 instead of getting, you know, taking down your credit card. And be content with what you have. Contentment is mentioned a lot in the Bible. Now, there's a difference between contentment and being complacent. They're not saying being complacent, but be content with what you have. Now, if you have a problem with spending a lot of money, if you're one of these hyper consumers, what are some ways that you can curtail your appetite for new things? Well, if you don't know, let me tell you. Turn off the TV or get a TiVo. Don't watch any more commercials because they will tell you what you didn't know that you have to have. They will show you what you didn't know that you have to have. Magazine articles, okay? Water cooler talk, you know, at work. Hey, I got this new gadget. Let me tell you about it. So tunnel vision, just think about your own situation. Don't start to look at all these new things. And you'll notice a lot of people drive around in new cars. Well, they're not paid for. A lot of people have these big fancy houses. They're not paid for. So don't let that bother you. Just be content with what you have. Okay. Now we're going to look at the...
Never buy by impulse.
Okay. If you want something, you see something, go home and think about it. And then go back if there's something you really have to have. Okay. Now let's look at the good stuff. I like to talk about saving and investing as the good stuff. Could someone read for me Proverbs 30:24? And whoever gets there first, just read Proverbs 30:24. Talk about the ant.
There be four things which are little upon the earth, but they are exceeding wise.
Oh, keep going. I'm sorry. I'd go maybe... go to 25.
Okay. The ants are people not strong, yet they prepare their meat in the summer.
Okay. I should have put 24 and 25. The ants prepare their meat in the summer. What they do is they plan ahead. Okay, they plan ahead and they store up. Now, we all know about Joseph. I call it the Joseph principle in Genesis 41, saving up in the year of plenty for the year of famine. And is that's really what we're talking about when we talk about retirement. What is retirement? It's the years of famine because we don't have a job. We don't have income coming in, earned income. We're hoping that we'll save up enough money and we'll have Social Security and some other things to pay us while we're retired. But that's really the year of famine. The Bible talks about steady plodding. What is steady plodding? That's really investing every month, putting it away every month. You're not going to get rich over time. You're not going to get rich tomorrow unless you win the lottery, which that's a whole nother class. But you need to do steady plodding every month. Ecclesiastes talks about diversification. What is diversification? What do you do when you diversify?
Spread it out.
Mm-hmm. If you think about a pie, you have a portion of the pie that's your real estate. And if you hear people say, well, you really need to invest in real estate. Well, do you have a house? Mm-hmm. Do you own part of that house? Mm-hmm. Well, you're already in real estate, so don't worry about that. But that's one of the pieces of the pie. And then you have cash. And then you have your stocks over here. So you really need to diversify. Save and give. Luke talks about save and give, and I've put these in your handout. But those are some scriptural references. Okay, let's look at the ripple effect. Can anybody tell me what a dollar? Now, you're going to say, where are you going to get 8% these days? And I don't know now. I've got an I don't know for you. Now the stock market's. But typically, long-term investments. Going to give you 8%, but in 30 years, how much money will you have? In 30 years? 200? That would be nice. Would you have $30 if you got 8% every year? You'd have more, okay? You'd have $113 because we talked about that compounding interest on the debt side, you know, owing more every year, every month because you don't pay it off. Well, the same thing happens when you're talking about savings. The money, you get interest on top of interest on top of interest. You can look at your CDs and things like that. So this is what I tell the students at Freed Artemen. Now, they think I'm crazy when I say, put away $50 a month. They're saying, I don't have any money. How can I put away $50 a month? And I say, well, do $5 a month. But what I talk to the guys first. I say, guys, I need you to really think about skipping a date once a month. And then the girls get really upset with me. And I said, but wait a minute, ladies, just let me finish. In the end of 5 years, because a lot of college students spend 5 years in college, not four, what do you have at the end of 5 years? And the ladies start to think about it, and they say, oh, he's got an engagement ring for me. And exactly, you know, he can ask her to marry him, you know, in 5 years, or down payment for something. But that's just $50 a month, because it's interest on top of interest on top of interest. And I tell them, you know, go online, go to Fidelity, Vanguard, one of these companies, and you do steady plotting, okay? But you can even do $5. It wouldn't be near as much, but it would be something. What about 10 years? $50 a month, $9,100. And we go to 30 years, $75,000. So, again, I just want to kind of show you a visual image of what happens, and many of you know this. Now, what happens when we have a bad stock market? It can take a lot of this away. But, and we'll talk about this when we talk about retirement, what should you do if that happens? Let's say you're retired and you had $75,000 saved up and now it's worth half that.
Hang on to it.
Do you really, have you recognized that loss yet?
No, not yet.
No, why? Because it's all on paper. Until you sell it or until you pull it all out and put it in cash, you don't have a loss. I know that's hard to think about. But you don't have a loss. Okay, so let's talk about how to save. Okay, what happens to a dollar if we put it under our mattress today and we come back, is it the 7th today? 7th today? You come back the 7th of 09, how much is that dollar worth? No, it's worth less than a dollar. It's worth about 97 cents, 96 cents, because what happened with gas? We weren't paying even $2 a gallon a year or two ago, so it's worth less. So we don't want to put it nowhere. Okay.
Jesus said we was wicked and sloppy, sure.
That's right. The parable of the talents, which I'll talk a little bit about in Bible class tomorrow. What about a checking account? Should we put all our money in a checking account? Why? No interest, typically. And can you get access to it pretty easily? Yeah, so that's not very good, especially if you're not disciplined. Again, your money will be worth less. What about a savings account? Your money will also be worth less. If it's my savings account, I'm getting 1.15% in my bank savings account. Okay, what is inflation? 3 or 4%. So it's less. I still have it. It's not in the stock market. Again, diversify. Don't put it all in savings, but put a little bit in savings. Certificate of deposit. Okay, you'll probably keep up with inflation in a certificate of deposit or a little bit more. What is a disadvantage of a certificate of deposit? Can't get the money. I call this taking your money to prison, putting your money in prison. Now, the older you are, the more you'll want to have money in prison because you don't need it out there on that roller coaster on the stock market. But what happens if you want to spring it for early parole? You get penalized. You get penalized. So just think about that. Now, this is a great way. If you know you're not going to need the money for 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, it's not a bad place to put your money. As long as you don't have to take it out early. What's a money market? How does a money market work? It's kind of like a checking account, but it pays higher interest. So this is somewhere that we can maybe keep up with inflation. But again, you get quick access to the money. So that may not be good if you're not very disciplined. Okay, so really when we're talking about savings, we're talking about long-term investments. So let's talk about stocks. If I buy 100 shares of Coca-Cola, what do I own? I own part of the company.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happens when everybody stops drinking Coke? I don't have any money. I mean, it all goes away. That's why I should do maybe a mutual fund. What is a mutual fund?
It's a group of stocks that a group of people pull together.
Right, it's mutual.
Any stocks and bonds in
the right, so if everybody switches to Pepsi from Coke, and I own both of them, I'm still pretty much okay. It's called diversity. Back to Ecclesiastes. So everybody knows what mutual funds are. Now let's talk about retirement plans. Who can tell me what a retirement plan is? What's the big difference in a retirement plan and maybe just a mutual fund out here by itself?
Tax deferred.
Tax deferred, which means you don't pay taxes on it annually, which also means you get to earn money on the taxes you didn't have to pay. So it stays in that account, and it should grow faster. Should grow faster. What about an IRA? What does this stand for? Individual retirement account. Has anybody heard of a Roth IRA? Who can tell me the difference?
It's grows tax deferred, comes out tax free.
That's right. You never have to pay taxes. Never have to pay taxes. Do your children, let's say you die, do your children ever have to pay taxes on it? No, they never pay taxes on it. But they do have to take distributions. You don't have to take it out, but your children do have to take it out. And we'll talk more about kind of the limits. Okay, so let's talk about the emergency fund. We talked about the $1,000. Really, you need to look at 3 to 6 months of your fixed and variable expenses. Can anybody tell me what a fixed expense is?
House payment.
Not
that you pay
every month. The same amount every month. Okay, what about a variable? Yes, sir?
I have a question.
Okay.
It takes me a little while.
That's all right. Okay.
And they said that no, I would be better off to not move it into a Roth.
Okay.
But now I have to take out this distribution every year or so much. I'm old enough. Would I have been better off if I'd have went into Roth?
Well, it depends on your specific situation. I've read a lot that tells us that over time, if you're going to have 10, 15, 20 years, it's always better to pay the taxes and go into a Roth, but a lot of things you need to consider. First of all, do not pay the tax if you're gonna, because when you take it out of an IRA, you have to pay the taxes, okay? And then you put it into a Roth. If you're putting it into a Roth, you don't need to pull the taxes out of your IRA to pay the t- to pay the taxes to go in the Roth. When they first came up with a Roth, they gave us 4 years to recognize the taxes, and so we could pay it over 4 years. That was the best time, and I still think that was the best time to get into a Roth to convert.
So our Roth would have been good.
Well, now that you, let's say you have an IRA that started at $30,000 and now it's still at $30,000 because of the stock market, mm-hmm. now might be a pretty good time to take it out and put it in a Roth, mm-hmm. if you can do it. No, no. You'll have to take your disbursement on your IRA. If you're already retired, you'll have to take that disbursement.
I am.
Yeah. So there's not much you can do at this point, unfortunately. But for those of you that are not retired yet, again, when you're putting money in an IRA, it has to be earned income. So if you retire early and you don't have any earned income, you cannot set up an IRA. It has to be earned income. It can't be investment income. And we're going to talk more about those specifics. So where do I put my emergency fund? I don't want to put it in the stock market because I would have lost some of it. We need the checking account, bank savings, money market. This is where you do need to put your savings, you know, for emergencies. What is an emergency, though?
A medical expense.
A medical expense.
Washer breaks.
I'm out of town. I blow a tire. I don't have any cash. I got to use my credit card. But then you need to pay it off and use that emergency fund. Is it, I got to have this flat screen TV? No, it's not. I've got to go to the Super Bowl and buy tickets. Okay, so here are a couple places to go for additional information, if it ever comes down here. There. These are a couple books that I've read, and The Automatic Millionaire, great book. David Bach is a pretty gifted writer. It's very easy to read. He also wrote Start Late, Finish Rich. He wrote a Start Late, Finish Rich just for women. He wrote one just for couples. But The Automatic Millionaire, how do we become an automatic millionaire?
Born
with a silver spoon in our mouth, right. Get a big inheritance. This is back to that steady plotting. How do we do something automatic? Well, if you have a retirement savings vehicle at work, you need to take advantage of it. Because the money comes out before you even see it, and it goes in every month. Steady plotting every month, that's automatic. What about our house? A lot of people bought a house maybe at $50,000, $100,000, now it's doubled. Okay, how did they pay for that house most of the time? They got a mortgage, and they paid it every month. They paid it automatic, came right out of the checking account, or came right out of their check. Again, it's an automatic way. So think about all the ways you can... That's some of the things talked about, the automatic way to do things. Also, that book, it's The Millionaire Next Door. Let me get down to that. Financial Peace, Dave Ramsey. This book is sitting on the cart in the auditorium for you to check out, I noticed, last night. So if you want to read this book, it's on the cart in the auditorium. Financial Peace by Dave Ramsey. He says establish a $1,000 emergency fund. He says pay those small debts off first. He says never use credit cards. There are a couple of other things. It's a great study. They even have a study you can do, you know, as a Bible class at church. We did that. Another good, as an aside, another good Bible study is Your Money Counts. The book is called Your Money Counts. If there's an education person in the room that sets up classes for the church here, it's a great study. It breaks out to be one quarter, and it goes into everything you need to know about money, and it's all biblical. So it's good stuff. There's a couple seats up front here if you need to sit up front. The Millionaire Next Door. What does the Millionaire Next Door look like? Has anybody met a Millionaire Next Door? You probably didn't know it if you did, because you'd have no idea. They don't buy new cars. They don't buy big fancy houses. They don't spend a lot of money on their clothes. And they steady plod. They do steady plodding all their life, and they become a millionaire. Okay, because they live what? Frugally, or well beneath their means, not above their means, but beneath their means. So that's what, and it's a great book. Millionaire Next Door is a great book. I've not read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but one of the guys used to be in the office did. He put this on here. Wealthy Barber. You can blame the Wealthy Barber for having to listen to me this morning, but that's the reason I'm in front of you this morning. I had an accounting degree from Fried Hardeman. I didn't like accounting that much, didn't know what I wanted to do. And one of the elders at our church said, hey, I heard you're kind of struggling with what you want to do. Read this book. And that's why I got interested in financial planning, because the premise is there's a brother and sister, and the sister goes with her brother every 6 weeks or so to get his hair cut at the local town barber where they grew up. And over time, that barber teaches them every month a different lesson, because he's listened to his clients as he's cut their hair, and he's used those techniques, and he's a millionaire. But he's still cutting hair because that's what he wants to do. So that's that. Okay, we're going to take a break after retirement planning, but let's try to get as far as we can on retirement planning first. That's another good book, Richest Man in Babylon. That is a good book. Does anybody else have any other suggestions on books?
Money Grows on Trees by Alton Howard.
Money Grows on Trees?
He's published his own book, Howard Publishing.
Okay. Okay. Good. Okay, so let's start talking about retirement planning. Are there any other questions about that general financial planning before we move on? Any questions about that? Okay. Let's go to retirement planning. Okay. What affects retirement planning? Well, life expectancy. Can anybody tell me what life expectancy is? How long we expect to live. Okay? A lot of that has to do with where you live, what you eat, what your family history is, and things like that. Or, you know, it could be, you know, accidents play a part in all of this. But I'm going to show you a life expectancy chart that's made up by actuaries that sit around and crunch numbers, but it's based on everybody your age, average, how long they live. And whenever I run a plan, I always use the age of 90 to be conservative. You really need to look at your family history. How long did your parents live? How long are they still living? Or grandparents? Inflation. Who can tell me what inflation is? Cost of living. I mean, you know, things go up every year. And so this is a big part of planning for retirement. Okay, growing need for retirement income to come from personal assets. Who can tell me what a pension is?
Defined
benefit.
Account that you don't contribute to, but you're
right, your employer. Are we seeing a lot of growth in this area? No. We're not getting these big pensions anymore, which means that more of our retirement planning is going to have to come from what we save and what our employer helps us save. But that's what we're talking about there. The pension is, there are still some pensions out there, and but not as many. Serious decline in savings rate. You mentioned earlier it's a negative in some cases. Major rise in cost of retirees' health care. Perfect example. My mother came to visit a couple months ago, and she is a recreational shopper. She just likes to shop. You know, she doesn't ever buy a lot. She just shops. And she dropped something on her toe and broke her toe. And she's on Medicare. She's over 65. Went to the doctor. They taped her two toes together. Guess what the bill was for? $362. They called that surgery. She called the doctor, called Medicare, and they said, no, that's right. That's what it costs. That's the code. That's a whole other subject on why we're in such a pickle with Medicare and Medicaid. But things cost more. She just used some tape, and it wasn't even a doctor that taped it together. So that's an issue. But it costs more to go to the doctor. It costs a lot more. Tendency to invest inappropriately with little or no growth component. Basically, putting all your money in a savings account. That's not a good idea, because you don't get all that growth. Okay? Now, it's hard for me to sit here and tell you that now the stock market's bottomed out. But, again, you've got to think long term, and you need to always have a little bit in that growth area. I mean, if you're very conservative, you don't want to have a lot, but you need to at least maybe buy some bonds or something, long-term bonds that can get you some better returns. Okay. Let's look at the decreases. This is what should go down when you retire. No Social Security taxes, because you're no longer having any earned income. No savings, Okay, that's something you need to put in your budget. Whenever you're doing a budget, part of it needs to be savings. That's actually an expense when you're working. But you're not saving anymore, you're using it. No mortgages, we hope. We hope we paid our house off by now. No children. What I mean, there's no children living at home. This is not the case that it used to be a long time ago. A lot of children are moving back home, and that's another seminar, I guess. But I did it after college. I moved back home for a little while because everything's so expensive. It's just so expensive to get started these days. No work-related expenditures. You're not having to maybe do as much dry cleaning. You're not having to commute to work, so you don't have that gas. So these all go down. Are there any other decreases you all can think about? Okay, those are just a few. What about increased health care? Health care is going to cost more, could cost more. Travel and leisure. A lot of people put off going on big trips until they retire. This is one area that grows up. Back on this no children thing, what's another increase? Could be an increase when you retire. Grandchildren are helping out your children. I have seen this almost bankrupt individuals. It's a sad, sad situation. But things happen, and people wonder, well, where does that cut off? Where does my responsibility as a parent cut off? I don't know. That's a hard question to answer. But you can use all your retirement savings helping your family out. So that is another increase because you don't have more money coming in. That's the problem. If you still had the money coming in, it wouldn't be an issue. Okay, sources of retirement. Continued. Social Security. Here's the Social Security website. They have a great benefits estimator. You can go in. You do have to put your Social Security number in there. I've done it. It didn't show up on my credit report. There wasn't any trouble. But you can go in there at any time and figure out what your benefit is. Private pension plans, that's where your employer puts money in for you. Personal savings and inheritance. Those are really, so really this one is the big one. That's what we call our nest egg. Okay, that's where the money's going to come from to fund our retirement. Okay, this is a kind of a neat little chart. This shows you on Social Security, if you're making $20,000, of course it's indexed for inflation, then 67.5% of your income will be replaced by Social Security. Well, a lot of people are making more than that. So if you go over here, if you're making $100,000, less than 20% of your income is going to be replaced by Social Security. So the point in all this is, do we need to just depend on Social Security to retire? No. And the younger you are, you know, you're thinking, I don't think I'll ever see that money because I'm going to have to be 67 right now. If you were born before, not if you were born in 1935 or before, your normal retirement age is 65. If you were born after that, and I think that may be my next slide. Yeah, there it is, 38. If you were born in 1938, or before 1938, normal retirement age is 65. But this kind of shows you, based on where you were, when you were born, what your normal retirement age is. And why is that going up? Life expectancy. And what's happening to the Social Security Trust? Going down. We're almost to the point where everything that goes in goes out. Everything that goes in. So all the people that are working right now are generating the money to pay out to those that are already retired. So I don't know what we're going to fix with that. I know that our president-elect does not believe in privatizing Social Security. So that's off the table at this point. Maybe to come back later. I don't know. Okay. You hear these horror stories about, oh, if I work, I'm not going to have any of my Social Security money. Well, this is kind of how it works. If you're still working, you can continue to receive full early Social Security benefits at 62. Now, at 62, do you get your full benefit? No, it's about 80%. But if annual income does not exceed $13,560, so you can start taking your Social Security at 62 and earn $13,560 or $11.30 a month, and they won't take any of your Social Security. But if you make every dollar above that, every $2, a dollar's withheld. So you only get a buck of the $2 above $13,560. That's earned income. That's earned income. That's this year. At full retirement age, Workers may earn $36,120 annually, or $3,010, and a dollar is withheld for every $3 over that. So that's kind of how it works right now. That kind of, so if you're thinking about taking a part-time job, if you're currently retired, that's how much you can make without the taxes coming out. Widows can take their benefit at age 62 and then wait for their spouse's full half benefit. Now, let me explain what I'm talking about there. A lot of the times, if the spouse didn't work outside the home or didn't have a lot of earned income, the deceased half benefit is more than their benefit. And so they can go ahead and get their benefit at 62, and then at 65 they can get that full half benefit that they would get anyway. Okay, so that's one thing to think about. Yes, sir. Okay, I figured I would lose a couple on this part. Okay.
37 and a half, whatever it is, at age 62.
Okay.
She's 71 now.
Okay.
Can she up her benefit from the 62 once she's 62?
If your half benefit is more than her full benefit, yes.
Well, of course, a half is more than 37 and a half.
Yeah, if hers is 37.5% of yours, then she can take half of yours. She can get half of your benefit. Uh-uh. Now call just, well, yeah, it's Social Security, and they won't volunteer this information, but you can talk to them about it, because she already started on that, but talk to them about it, and I don't know if it may be too late at this point. Yeah, I don't know, since she's past her normal retirement age, if they can go back. Yes. Well, yeah, I'm sorry. This is a widow situation. I'm sorry.
I thought you said they could go up to it.
No, on a widow situation,
okay,
she could. Sorry, okay, good. All right. Sorry, I misunderstood you. Yes?
What's the age that there's no penalty for earned income? Is it 70?
Well, if you work up until age 70, every year you work past your normal retirement age, 8% is added to your benefit. But so it's probably 70, but I'm not exactly sure. 72?
It was 70 when I bailed in. 70,
okay. Is it 70 or 70 and a half? I'm pretty sure it's still 70, but I'm not positive. Any? No, that's 70 and a half on your retirement. No, we're talking about that you don't have to pay Social Security taxes on your earned income. It stops at 70, we think. Okay. Any other questions about that? Okay. And if you have questions afterwards, please come up and see me during the break. Life expectancy. Okay, so pick out how old you are here, and it shows you how long you're going to live. But what's interesting is the longer you live, the longer you live. I mean, if you're 81 to 82, you're going to live to be 91. And mainly, my life expectancy is about 77, because a lot of things can happen between now and the time I'm 65. But once you hit 65, it really jumps up. So this is what I'm talking about as far as figuring out how many years. If you're 65, you may need your benefit for about 21 years. So that kind of helps you decide what you're going to need. Okay, let's talk more about putting money in a retirement plan. A 401k is the same thing as a 403b, but a 403b is for a nonprofit. If you work for a nonprofit like we do at Freed Hardeman, we have a 403b. What in the world is that? What's 401k and 403b? What does that mean? It's just a tax code. It's where this plan falls in the tax code. Okay, so don't be too concerned about that. But it's a tax-deferred savings plan through your employer where you put money in and they match. Okay, the maximum contribution is $15,500 a year. And at age 50, you can put an additional $5,000 in. Okay, so that's $20,500 at age 50 you can put into one of these plans. And on an IRA, the maximum contribution is $5,000, and if you're 50 or over, you can put in $6,000. Now, let's say that I'm over 50 and my wife doesn't work. How much money can I put into an IRA?
$6,000 a piece if you're over 50.
Right, we can save $12,000 a year. I can put in $6,000 into mine. I can put my money into hers, $6,000.
You can do both
401k
and IRA.
You can do both
401k and IRA. Is there an age limit on the IRA?
No, you just have to have earned income. You can do it for, now, there is an age limit, 70 and a half. Once you start taking distributions, you can't put money into one. Yeah. Anyone with earned income or spouse without income, before I forget, I'm going to mention it here. In the tax incentive plan that was passed under this big bailout bill, they extended the IRA rollover. Does anybody know anything about this IRA, charitable IRA rollover? Okay, you can take money from your IRA,
your distribution
that typically gets what? Taxed. Mm-hmm. And you can have it sent directly to a charity like the church here, and you don't pay taxes. Now that's really big because they tell you you have to take this out, but you don't have to pay taxes. And generally it's better off than if you had taken the tax, you'd paid the taxes, and then given the money and received a charitable deduction. So that's really important. Now, that has been extended this year and next year. So if you're planning your giving for next year, think about if you're 70 and a half or older, if you know anybody that's 70 and a half or older, this is a great opportunity to plan your giving out using your IRA monies because you have to take it out anyway. Yes, sir. No. So you probably need to write that down. I don't think I added that. It's called the Charitable IRA Rollover. Now, let me tell you how it works. You would just contact your provider. So if your IRA is with Fidelity or if your IRA is with a bank in town, you would call them and say, I want you to send $1,000 of my $5,000 mandatory distribution. I want you to send it to the Flatwoods Church of Christ. And so they'll make it out to Flatwoods Church of Christ, and then they'll either give it to you or they'll send it directly to the elders here. But just make sure your name's not on the check. And that's how it works. It's that easy. And you never received it, so you don't get a 1099 on that money. You're not supposed to. So you don't have to claim it as income.
But can you not claim it as a deduction?
You cannot claim it as a deduction. You don't get to double dip because it was never what? It was never income. So how do you give something that's not income?
You say make sure your name is not
on the check. It needs to be the charity's name on the check.
Okay.
That's how we know that it's a direct IRA rollover to the charity.
But there is some record somewhere that tells that you did
it. Yes, it goes against your mandatory distribution. They keep the record.
Okay, so, Burton, is there any difference in between just taking the money and giving the same amount to the church?
Well, the problem there is you have to pay taxes on the distribution. You get the deduction, but in a lot of cases, it could bump you up into another tax bracket.
That's true.
Yeah, so it's generally, you would have to look at your individual. It could increase your tax liability. So it's a great idea if you got to take the money out anyway, or if you've got an overfunded plan and you don't think you're going to need as much of that money. It's hard to say when you're not retired yet, but it's a great idea. Okay. IRA deductible contributions. Single or head of household, the phase out begins at $53,000, and so totally phased out at $63,000. That means that you cannot take a deduction on your taxes for money you put into your traditional IRA. Okay, did you all know that you can deduct the contribution into your IRA? Some of you can. To a traditional IRA, you can do that on your taxes. But if you make $63,000 or more single, you can't take a deduction. So it may be better off for you to do a Roth IRA. Okay, Roth, you put money in after tax, but you never pay taxes again. So that's that income. If you're married, it's $105,000. And then if there's only one participant in a plan, in a 401k or 403b, you can make $159,000 and still make a totally tax deductible IRA contribution. There is, and that's the next. You're ahead of me a little bit. It's there somewhere, yeah. But, yes, there is on the Roth. Now, I'm getting a little technical here, but I wanted you to have the information. It's on your sheet. Similarities between the Roth and the traditional. And does anybody know why it's called a Roth? It's kind of a funny name. Senator Roth came up with his idea. He said, we as a government are encouraging people to save money, but then when they retire, we take it from them. That's really not fair. So let's set up this new Roth IRA. We'll get our money now. We'll get the money now because they put it in after tax. Annual contributions limited to $4,000. That should say $5,000. I should have fixed that. Investments grow tax deferred. But Roth IRA differences, contributions are never tax deductible, but distributions from the account are tax free. You never pay taxes. So if you put in $10,000, that's all you put in, it grows to $100,000, you pull it out, you never pay taxes on any of that growth. That's $90,000 you made that you don't pay taxes on. It's a wonderful idea if you can do it. And let me show you and you never have to take a distribution. So this is a good way if you want to leave maybe an inheritance to your children and you never take a distribution, then you could do that with an IRA. We'll talk in the last session about the best assets to give away. It's the retirement money because charities don't pay income taxes. You do and your heirs pay income taxes. You can't get away from paying income taxes on IRAs. Now, Roth's different because you don't have taxes. Here are the income limits. You can't do an IRA, a Roth IRA, if you make over $116,000 if you're single. Can't do an IRA. Married, both active participants, you can't do one if you make $169,000 or more, unfortunately. But that's the income limit. They really haven't indexed those as much as they should have, but that's where the phase-out begins. A lot of us don't have to worry about this, but some of us do. Okay, now let's look at a case study. I think we're going to have just enough time to do this. You know, we talk about all this stuff, but until you put a face with it, it's kind of hard to get. I want to show you a lady that we met with in our office. Her name was not Miss Jane Doe, but for this case, it is. She was 64 years old, and she said, "I am a conservative investor." I said, okay, I've parked that up here. You're a conservative investor, and I currently have $1,050,000. She couldn't believe it. Her husband had died. She had no idea she was a millionaire. She had no idea. But I'll show you in a minute what that's composed of. It's not just in cash. That's one reason she didn't know she was a millionaire. She wanted direction for managing her assets. She wanted somebody to help her figure out what to do with this money. And then she wanted to maintain a current lifestyle and provide an inheritance or sufficient assets for her children at death. That's it. She just wanted to understand what she had and save something for her children. Okay, so it's kind of hard to read, and it's probably hard to read on your handout, but here are some typical asset allocations. Remember we talked about diversification? Here are these pies here. Now, she said she was conservative. So the blue is stocks. Bonds. 65% should probably be in bonds, 25% in stocks, 5% cash, 5% real estate. That's a typical, it can vary, but most of it's in fixed income. So when the market goes south, she's not going to lose it all. Well, look at her allocation. She had almost 60% in stock, 20% in real estate, 18% in cash, and just 4% in bonds. So this part should be blue, not red. So we knew we had a little problem. And it was really the first time I did this plan for her, she had $1 million. When I finally did the plan for her, she had $1 million, but she came to me after she had lost $400,000 because she didn't know what she had, and she had, I think, almost 20% in one stock, and it went south. So that's why you need to think about the things you have. One way that you end up having a lot of stock in one company is if your 401k or your 403b, well, really your 401k, if they match what you put in with stock only. If you have the ability at some point to diversify that, please do so, because I know you have a lot of loyalty to the company in many cases, but that company, their fundamentals could change or the market could change and all that stock go down. That's why you need to be well diversified. Sometimes you don't have a choice, but that was the case with her husband's company. So 19% was in cash. We said you really need to limit that to 5 to 10% in just cash, because her cash, she really wasn't getting any interest. Okay, she just had a lot of that in her checking account. 17% was in one company. You really need to limit this to 5%. And in her, we said 5 to 10%, but really 5%. And so that we're going to use that money and put it in bonds, fixed income. 42% of our assets were in other equities, and we just said you need to monitor those with your investment person, make sure.